We're all done with animals. I don't have any more animals, so we have to go to beeps and buttons. You guys have to guess the name of this sound.
Chord.
Yeah. Yeah. The beginning of Chattanooga Choo Choo.
See, that's you're going in the right direction now because its name has to do with the style of music, the genre.
Jazz.
Yes, jazz piano. Very good.
Hello and welcome to Drupal Easy podcast number 66. My name is Ryan Price, and today we are going to have a guest on who is from Florida. This may be something we haven't done in quite a while, so I'll go ahead and introduce our regular panel. First of all, we have Mr. Michael Anello.
Hey, Ryan, how's it going?
Excellent, and you just got back from South Florida, I guess we all did, in Davie, Florida, which is very close to Fort Lauderdale, and you had a lot to do with that event, right, Mike?
Yeah, we had the first ever Drupal Camp South Florida, which is kind of surprising considering how big of a area South Florida is and how many millions of people live down there. But, you know, we decided that, you know, it was time to kind of get that community motivated and organized a little bit better, and we figured how better to do that than to organize a camp. And it turned out great. We had a great turnout, over 100 people, four tracks. We had Brian House from Acquia come down and give a keynote on Drupal Commons.
So, excellent.
Yeah, the four of us were there. I think I don't remember hearing anybody complain, so I'm going to assume that, you know, everyone had a good time and learned a lot.
And somebody who just got off of a quality assurance talk at Drupal Camp South Florida, Mr. Andrew M. Riley.
Hello, and quality assurance is very important. I just wanted to let the world know that.
Was that the first slide?
Actually, it kind of was. Oh. I mean, it's just, not to go too much into my talk, but it's the difference between delivering just a site and delivering something polished. And when someone's paying you a lot of money, you want to put as much polish on that as possible.
So I didn't sit in on your talk, but how Drupal-y was it? It probably wasn't all that Drupal-y.
No, it was probably about 20% Drupal-y.
All right.
Is that a new word?
Drupal-y?
Drupal-y?
That could be the podcast title.
Yes.
Interesting.
20% Drupal-y.
And last but not least, someone who is well known to all of our hosts here, but maybe not to everyone on the podcast, is from Sarasota, Mr. Stephen Barker of Digital Frontiers Media. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here. Very honored, actually. I've listened to the podcast for a long time. I love love all the blogs you guys have always put up.
Stephen is one of those guys that Ryan and I keep on saying, we got to have Stephen on the podcast. And then we forget about it for 3 months.
I think this started in like San Francisco.
Yeah, a long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
So we're finally, you know, making good on our efforts here.
Following through. That's
good. Follow through.
And Stephen, you've been in the Drupal community for a while. I mean, obviously you went to DrupalCon San Francisco. Like, how did you get started with Drupal? And, you know, give us your backstory, I guess.
Well, I come to Drupal from an odd background, I think, as opposed to most of the people that are using Drupal. Well, I guess I should say most of the developers out there, you know, that they've been doing some form of computing or web development for a long time. I come from a biology background. I just kind of, after 17 years of stepping away from computers, got back into it about, I don't know, about 5 or 6 years ago. And it was about 4 years ago, I decided, hey, I'm going to try and start up a business. I needed a website. And actually, it was another Sarasota Drupaler who kind of turned me on to, you know, Drupal, and I just I banged my head against it for a long time, but I've grown to love it and appreciate just the genius behind the API. So
that sounds like you started with about Drupal 5.
Four point six actually, and I think I did one upgrade that was pretty painful to 4.7, and I haven't really updated my site since then. that's actually in the plans. We're right now, we've got a designer that's going to be redoing our site, and then we're going to rebuild it probably in D7. So
that happens a lot with Drupal shops. They end up getting really busy with actual paying work, and you know, their own site, you know, basically goes down the tubes.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's one of the things. Like, I've got there's a lot of stuff. Like, I'd like to help contribute to the Drupal community in general. I find it hard to put the time in. That's one of the things that I appreciate about the work that you guys do is somehow your time management skills are so on top of stuff that you can be involved in all these things. And I just I take my hat off to you because that's a hell of a lot of work.
Now, there's a lot of people doing it, and it's just one of those things where I look at it as the time I invest back in the community, I'm going to get back out one way or the other.
Yeah.
Either, you know, through feeling, you know, better or just picking up new clients and being able to raise my hourly rate.
Mm-hmm. Or mini mics.
Or having a small army.
Indeed. So, Mike, how is your class going, by the way, since we're in the, you know, shooting the breeze phase?
It's going well. We, you know, quick recap. I have a 10-week Drupal course going on right now with 18 students. We're done with the third week of classes. That was last week, and it was cool. We actually had, I think, about a half dozen of them make the drive down to Drupal Camp South Florida for their, you know, kind of pop their cherry with large Drupal events and kind of start getting them to figure out and see what the community is like. But it's going well. I mean, there's a lot of people who are really interested and really starting to, you know, to get it. I see a lot of light bulbs coming on, and every week things get cranked up a little bit more and more. I was actually just writing curriculum for this week's classes, and you know, we're going to dive right into stuff like you know, WYSIWYG and IMCE and image styles and all of the various, you know, image related modules that I love, like, you know, image resize filter and the insert module and stuff like that. So, you know, it's fun. It's cool having a group of people who have a relatively strong technical background but know nothing about Drupal, and, you know, watching them kind of learn about Drupal. And
are they like putty in your hands?
I don't know. We'll see. Actually, I'm really curious to see to meet with everybody on Tuesday. You know, tomorrow night's our next class, and one of the homework assignments over the weekend was everybody had to contribute documentation to Drupal.org somewhere.
Very nice.
You know, over the past week or so, they've been evaluating and testing a bunch of modules, and you know, I saw it as a perfect opportunity for them to, if, you know, as soon as they started complaining about the documentation on these modules, I'm like, oh, here's an opportunity. So, you know, there should be 18 updated piece of documentation or new pieces of documentation on Drupal.org from this class, and I'm excited to see what they've done.
Well, excellent. Eddie Berry is cheering somewhere in the world right now.
Yeah, you're a little behind the times there, Mr. Raleigh, though, because she is no longer the documentation lead.
I know, but I just remember her talk where she said everyone should contribute.
Okay. Well, then, yeah, okay, then you are not beyond the times. You are right with the times. I take that back.
A lot of the students were at the Drupal Camp South Florida? Is that?
Yeah, we had six of them come down. I don't think it was in my power to make it mandatory for them to all drive 3 hours south, but
right. Extra credit.
It was, it definitely, you know, it's one of those things where they can't do any harm by attending. So,
well, let's get back to Steven really quickly, as he is going to be our first story. Steven, it says here in my notes that you were named one of 25 people in tech to watch in the year 2010 by a local business website. Is that true?
Yeah, that's true. That kind of came about from my augmented reality work that I got kind of like when I was getting back into computers. I just saw one of these augmented reality demos. This is like 2005, so about 6 years ago, and at the time I thought this has to be fake. this is like some sort of like gimmick, or it's faked or something, and started doing research. And that's actually what my master's degree was augmented reality and tangible user interfaces.
So describe that a little more, you know, exactly what you're talking about as far as, you know, when you say augmented reality, and what was your master's thesis on?
Well, my master's thesis was just looking at interesting ways to use interfaces and this budding technology of using locative information and supplementing the data stream that you get. In our case, we were doing some, you know, like the, what's traditionally the video overlay, where you've got 3D objects that are overlaid over a direct video feed. And it you know, it moves like it's registered in a position, in a certain position, so you can move around this object and appears like it's a part, a natural part of the scene that you're looking at. But we were just investigating different methods of interfacing with that, like can you take physical objects and interact with these virtual objects in this kind of combined or mixed reality environment? Can you use like proximity between both physical and virtual, or proximity between two virtual objects that you're controlling to do useful things? There's just so much incredible work that comes out of the MIT laboratory. They've built all sorts of augmented reality solutions that are, I think, still kind of, you know, they're still very much in the developmental stages as far as like getting to a point of mass distribution. But I don't think it's too far off that you'll start seeing more of these things in like Best Buys and stuff like that. I think Ryan had an example of that, where they were, MIT was working on some of that stuff.
Yeah, they basically have a device they built that screws into a light bulb. And then they use just like one of those, you know, spring-loaded arm desk lamps as the way to hold it up above the desk at the right height. And it's got a little tiny projector and a little tiny camera in it so that it can do that sort of augmented reality thing. Look at an object on the table and then project some information next to the object that tells you, like, hey, this is a camera and it has an f-stop of 2.3 and, you know, it was used by this person to make a movie, and, you know, that sort of like information around the object that might help you, you know, decide between one camera or another, or just, I mean, the applications are really unlimited of what you could do with it, but, you know, in an effort to try and sell it, which is part of, you know, I think their job as the media lab, sell it to some commercial entity. They said, hey, we're going to put this in a retail situation where people might want to buy a product.
So is there any crossover between augmented reality applications and Drupal?
Actually, there, like a couple of years ago, there was someone had some sort of augmented reality module. It was a... It's like a login, some sort of weird like authentication program that used augmented reality markers to log you into a Drupal site.
Wow.
Kind of weird. I have been talking to Blair McIntyre, who works at Georgia Tech. Their computer or their in augmented environments laboratory. They've got a special browser that can read almost like RDF or metadata inside of an encoded page to present augmented content, basically based on your location, that sort of thing. Obviously, in order for the browser to work, you have to have, you know, that code embedded into the page's source. And we were talking about to kind of increase the adoption of that. It might be an interesting project to build a module, a Drupal module, that kind of inserts a lot of this information, this metadata, naturally into the page. Like you could use a location module or something of that nature to kind of geocode certain nodes, and that would be the basis of which it could, you know, start inserting certain locative related information into the page, the metadata.
Excellent. So the other thing that we were hoping to get to talk to you a little bit about is the talk that you did for Drupal Camp South Florida. I just I was there, and I thought it was just a really nice, you know, I guess the word I used was formula for putting together these applications. So it was called Powering Mobile Apps with Drupal Services, and you went through an example where you built a couple of apps for a radio station, and then you sort of realized that you needed to figure out a good workflow for that. So do you want to give us the backstory?
Sure. We were approached to do just a streaming radio application that didn't have a lot of functions on it. They're just, you know, they wanted to get their stream out to users that weren't within their actual broadcast radius. And so I started off like looking at Coco with Love had a really good blog post about, you know, pulling streams. And so I took that Stanford University's online course, you know, for iOS development, which is a really cool project, by the way, just to have access to all that information. So I started getting into Objective-C and programming it. And the first one we did was in Objective-C. And then the client says, hey, we want to do that in Java. It's like, okay, so now we've got two different code bases. And then we got a few other radio stations that were in kind of the same network that wanted versions of the software for their own stations as well, and realized that this is not going to be a very profitable solution if, like, we get a lot of these clients and we end up having to maintain hundreds of branches of code. So we just figured, let's figure out a way to put together a profile, like an application profile, where the information about the application, it's like metadata about an application, gets filtered to a single code base. And that's kind of where it came about. And it's been really helpful. We can generate both an Android and an iOS app for a radio station within about 30 minutes. So it can be, you know, highly profitable and very quick for, you know, the client as well. They, you know, they don't have to wait around for a lot of stuff. I mean, we have to wait on like graphics and stuff like that, but that's about it.
So what's happening there is the content is being served from the Drupal site through the services module. And then that content is being consumed by the app. Do I have that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, so there's a single code base, and the code base just has a single variable in the head of the code that just says, "Hey, I'm like the Joy FM radio app." You know, it just has a user ID, and it says it goes to a views.get service. And it says, okay, give me all the data on this particular user's radio stream profile. So it gets all the information about, like, where the shoutcast stream is being hosted and what the port number is. It gathers information about where their website is, maybe, you know, a call DJ number if they want to have like a call DJ button, you know, in their application for like requests and that sort of thing. It all just gets transferred into the application, loads up, and the interface just, you know, adjusts for all of the different options that are available for that particular radio stream.
And what you said too is like the only thing that you really bake into the app is the graphics, and everything else is literally downloaded from the Drupal site, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. And actually, I mean, this is kind of like phase one. Phase two, we are going to be adding like a sequel, like the Titanium. It's the apps are built in Titanium. I guess I should mention that. But it has an API for SQLite, and right now, like every time you launch the app, it will, you know, perform service calls, which is kind of nice in that, you know, it's always getting fresh information. But we could like boil that down to actually caching all this information, so that the first time you run the application, it'll download a bunch of stuff and get synced, and then if there's like, let's say there's a services call failure, you're not going to be stuck without being able to, you know, listen to the radio station. So,
yeah, I think in this application, it's probably not terrible that caching isn't there yet, because the application requires you'd right. be online anyway in order to get right. the stream. So
yeah, but I mean some yeah. yes,
but for speed and performance and all that other stuff, I mean
exactly. Yeah. yeah.
Well, and somebody asked you the question, you know, what happens if you get to several hundred radio stations and, you know, many tens of thousands of requests all coming in at the same time? You know, have you thought about the scaling? And you said it's just not really that big of a problem yet.
Yeah, it's not that big of a problem yet, but it is something that's been in the back of my head. It's like, but it's not really my area of expertise, so I am going to have to, you know, talk with some people. I was actually going to talk to some of the people at Web Enabled who are hosting the production site that's actually communicating with the apps and providing the services to see, you know, what their suggestions are.
So. Excellent.
Yeah. And if you guys have ideas, please let me know.
Well, maybe that's worth a blog post at some point.
Yeah.
All right, so I think that just about does it for that mobile applications talk. And in the Drupal development world, it looks like, Mike, there have been some recent changes in the Drupal core initiatives. Do you want to give us the overview there?
Change yeah, everything.
Change everything?
Yes.
Okay, next story. You discovered it. Fantastic. No, I wanted to bring this up because, you know, there's been a lot of work in the management of Drupal 8 as opposed to how Drupal 7 was put together with these core initiatives and leaders for each of the initiatives, and even more so on the project management and the reporting, so everyone can kind of keep up to date without having to dive, you know, knee-deep into the issue queue to try and figure out what's going on. So one of the things that is happening with Drupal 8 is there's a new Drupal 8 initiatives group on groups.drupal.org, and they are periodically posting blog posts, or I guess they're more of the form of discussions in this group, with a summary of each of the core initiatives and what its status is and what its progress has been and what the current hurdles are and where they currently need help. And it's the format is really, really nice because it's easily digestible for anybody to follow. You don't have to dive in and, you know, and find comment number 322 to know what's going on.
I definitely like that.
Mm. Yeah. So obviously the link will be in the show notes, but, you know, just scrolling down this list right now, you know, looking at configuration management initiative, they're color coding the statuses. So this is status green, which I'm assuming is full speed ahead. They have a little headline section talking about things that have happened recently, what the next steps are, and then a call to action section. So if you are interested in configuration management and what's going on with Drupal 8, here in the span of, you know, maybe 100 words, you can get a really good overview of what's going on and where they need help. Same thing for web services. That again is status green, and you can see that they've made progress on what appears. I'm not that deep in the web services stuff, but it appears they're really starting to build the building blocks for Drupal 8. I mean, the headlines are some progress made on HTTP context handler, some progress on internal refactoring, switched away from array access as an API module. So I couldn't tell you what any of that stuff means, but. You know, there's progress being made, and it looks like that there may or may not have been something occurring at Badcamp last weekend, as far in the form of a code sprint. Multilingual.
And what I like is that there's this call to action section, and then the kudos area.
Yeah. Yes.
It's very nice to get to see that, like, even though Larry Garfield's name is on that initiative, these two people definitely did a lot of work, and we don't want to just give Larry all the credit.
Yeah, let's Andrew, can you read off those two names in that section, please?
No.
Come on.
Okay, wait, two names? I see three. Which one are you talking about?
We're in the web services section.
Oh, I was looking at multilingual. That was even harder. All right.
Yeah, web services should be easy.
Oh, no. No way.
Come on, give it a shot.
Okay, you have Yuri and Pierre.
Oh, come on.
Very nice. Very nice.
You can't. Come on. Give the Pierre's last name should be easy.
Renault?
I believe that's how I would pronounce
applause.
It.
Applause.
Oh, wow. Here, hold on. Wait. Oh, I'm slow on the applause. I'm so sorry. Hold on. Just give me a second.
And right, the other one is Gerasimov.
Sounds Gerasimov. Good to me.
I think so, yeah. All right, good job, Andrew.
I just won the lottery.
So, you know, and, you know, if you scroll down through the rest of this blog post, it looks like the multilingual initiative is going fine, but they're looking for some feedback as well. HTML initiative is yellow, and it looks like they haven't really had a whole lot of momentum the past few weeks. It looks like they really need help in the issue queue and testing patches. It looks like they had a code sprint at Badcamp as well. So I look forward to these. These are fantastic, and it really, you know, it gives you kind of a sense as to where we are in the process.
Well, and this is really an effort, I think, to design in the open and be open about it. You know, the comment before was always, well, like you said at the beginning, you can jump on the issue queue, you can be an IRC, but like sometimes, you know, not everyone has time for that, or not everyone knows really where to get started with it. So this is kind of giving you that like deep look into some of it and the ability to get involved, and it gives you really specific actions you can do.
And it used to be where, I mean, which issue queue?
Right. You know,
there may have been 4, 5, 6, 10 issues for a particular, I'm going to use the word initiative, even though it wasn't formalized in Drupal 7, but not only which comment, but where to look. Is it on the Drupal.org issue queue? Is it in a group? Is everything happening on IRC? You know, unless you put in the time to kind of figure out where everything is, that was no small task.
Yeah.
So
and it could be confusing because a lot of times things got bumped around too.
Absolutely.
So I also put a link in there for I guess they do this about twice a month, so you can follow it for those as they come out.
Yep. Perfect.
Okay, so the next one I assume is going to be from Andrew, as it is your employer has now started a series of blog posts where you sort of like give the pros and cons of some popular tools that maybe aren't so popular depending on your opinion. It's a debate series, let's call it that.
Yeah, it's definitely a debate series, and this first one was on everyone's favorite topic, panels.
What I thought was interesting about this is it wasn't like panels versus X. It was just panels versus the world.
Well, people tend to feel pretty strongly about panels either one way or another. And every time that we had a meeting and the word panels was mentioned, this debate would just start up automatically. So this is why we actually now have this new series or this new debates.
Would tables get overturned? Everyone line up on opposite sides of the wall.
Chairs thrown.
Yeah, it was kind of like Benny and the Jets. Wow, West Side Story. Yeah, everyone came out snapping their fingers.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Right. You should put a camera in that meeting room. I wouldn't mind seeing that. Sounds good. So I think your stance on panels has been mentioned before on the podcast. You are not the biggest fan of panels.
That's correct.
Although in this post, it seems like you've softened your stance a little bit, and you know, I we talked about this over the weekend, and I believe what you told me was panels can be useful in certain circumstances.
Yeah, I would say I'm still not the biggest fan, but it definitely has its place.
So, give us an example of, you know, somewhere where you think it makes sense to use panels.
Well, a big one is if the end user of the site, be or client or whoever, wants to go ahead and make changes, some of the changes to the layout. It has its pros and cons, but wants to make that change because most clients are not going to go in and start throwing around template files and start changing regions and things like that.
So I read this whole debate, so I kind of am throwing a couple softball questions here, but I think it's important information. So what's your biggest draw, or what's the biggest drawback with panels in general, as far as you're concerned?
It's not even the overhead argument, because the latest versions are actually pretty darn skinny, so it doesn't really slow it down. What I would say the biggest drawback is just the added complexity of, you know, layer on layer. Was this done in a template? Was it done in a pre-process? Was it done in panels? So if the designer or themer isn't really disciplined in how they do it, it can kind of lead to a spaghetti type site.
So you're looking at, when you say that, you're talking about it more from a, you know, site administration point of view moving forward, where, you know, maybe 5 months down the line, the client wants to change something, where it can be very confusing to know, where do I change that? Is that a panels thing? Is that a block thing? Is that a context thing? Is that a theme thing? Is that a, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely a hitting the ground running type thing, especially if it was developed by a different organization or by the client themselves. And when you get handed it, it's just another thing that you have to go and look for and try and figure out how or why they did it.
So one of your colleagues mentioned something in this article, which I thought was very interesting, which I don't know who it was, so I'm not going to guess. But they said that they like to use panels specifically to lay out the content area, and then, but only to lay out the content area, to not let it override all Drupal regions, and then use context or some other tool to manage layout of the other regions. So I think if you're looking at it that way, where you're very, you know, rigid as far as, you know, everything inside the content variable belongs to panels. Everything else belongs to context. And then theming is just for, you know, styles.
So here's where I see that having a problem.
Okay.
Is I'm going to use a site that I built. It's called Florida Creatives. And, you know, you can see what I'm talking about. There's an area at the top of the page where we decided that on certain pages, like the pages that we commonly believe people are hitting directly, we want to show a little bit more information in an area that's not the content area. And then everywhere else, we want to hide that because it takes up a lot of space. So that was the way we designed it. And now I'm using context for part of it and panels for part of it. And it actually gets hard to manage if you want to make a small change to one area. It has like ripple effects all over the place. Whereas if it was all in panels or all in context, you would know where it was happening. You know what I mean? It's just the overhead of it is really confusing sometimes.
Yeah, I've always been of the mind that I'm going to use one or the other, but not both. So I was surprised when I read, you know, about, and again, I don't know if it was Jay or Brent or who it was.
It looks like Jay
said this.
It was Jay. Okay. So I was surprised when Jay said that sometimes that's how he thinks about it, is panels controls content, context controls everything else. Because from my perspective, yeah, that can make things pretty complicated, especially once you, you know, turn the site over to the client, if they ever have to go in and make changes. So let me ask, let's go around the horn here. So when you guys are designing a site where the client is asking for some level of control as far as putting blocks in different places and maybe control on the layout of content, what's your default go-to? I mean, are you guys more likely to lean towards context or panels, or is it just not a fair question and it really depends on the site?
I'll go first.
Okay.
For me, I think it depends on who's going to be updating the site. If it's more likely that all they're really doing is editing pages that are not controlled by panels, then I don't have a real big problem using it because I know they won't really be able to mess with it. But even with someone who's a fairly decent, you know, familiar with web technology but not a great Drupal site builder, I'm not going to try to hand them the keys to panels and expect them to be able to make changes, because they always want to make a change to the one thing that you didn't ever want them to change. and that in this case for me is panels. And I know that there's now this newer user interface where you can kind of do panels on the front end, which I haven't really played with a lot. And Context even has something like that, which I have used in Open Atrium. And I have to say, I don't know if I'd be cool with handing that over to a client either, because you really have to know what you're asking for in order to be able to use it.
Right. How about you, Steven?
Well, most of our clients are not. I don't think they're savvy enough in most cases to care about getting into the configuration and guts of, okay. of just about any of these interfaces. So we usually end up doing a lot of it for them. But then that leads us to the question of, you know, how do we then decide? And this is like an excellent blog post because, yeah, we do debate it. I tend to use panels for most things, and others in my team are always like, context. So we get into these same sort of debates. So it's kind of interesting.
Andrew, do we need to ask?
Well, of course. I'm chaotic neutral, so I say core blocks only.
Oh, good God.
No, I tend to lean context, but if I'm going to be turning it over to a tech-savvy client, usually like an agency or a shop or something like that, then I'm a little more comfortable with panels so they can do the last 1% of what they need to do.
See, I think I lean towards panels more, but it's very highly dependent on the client because I know that when I implement panels, there's going to be additional client training hours required. Mm. It's one of those things where the discussion with the client is something along the lines of how important is it for you to be able to get in there and drag and drop your layout?
Right. Well, and at least that if you are, you know, using panels, it does make it a lot easier if they change their mind or they do want to get into that, at least there's that, you know, that option without having to rebuild a lot of stuff.
So. Right. And, you know, the one thing we didn't mention in all of this is Page Manager, which is kind of what some of the underlying foundation beneath panels, which is extremely powerful and can do things that context can't. And we should really, you know, we should preface all this by saying the two context and panels, they're not completely equivalent. You know, they do similar things, but they kind of go about it in different ways. And context does a bunch of stuff that panels doesn't, and panels does a bunch of stuff that context doesn't. So if you're curious as to, you know, if it's just like a roll the dice and pick one, it's not, you know, a lot of times it depends on other factors that we haven't really addressed here.
Well, and I'll just go ahead and throw one final monkey wrench into it and say that the problem I was talking about before with my site where I have this area at the top. There was one point where I had this glimmer where I said, well, what if I just use context to place a mini panel? And then I said, no, that's like the snake eating its own head. Let me just move on from that. But that was what I really needed, was I needed these four blocks here. Unless you were logged in, then I wanted three of the same blocks and one of the blocks to be different. And to do that with context, I essentially had to make four contexts. And to do it with panels, it would have been one panel, but that area wasn't controlled by panels on this page. So it was this like real trade-off situation.
I'm going to throw in two more hand grenades into the conversation, but I don't think we should talk about them because it'll just go straight down a rabbit hole. Mm. I'm going to say Display Suite.
Yes.
And Omega Theme.
I was going to bring up the second one.
Both of which can be alternatives to context and or panels as well.
Yeah.
So we'll just let that one lie there. Maybe we'll come back to that on a future podcast.
I actually spent a large portion of my talk in South Florida talking about why I don't like the Display Suite.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I will definitely, you know, set up a podcast with the guys from Crimson then, and we can that sounds like a great future topic.
Head to head.
Head to head. Ryan v. Display Suite. Da, 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 da. All right. Should we move on?
Sure. Moving on. I guess that's my job. Mike, you have something to say about the Drupal Association, correct?
That seems like I always do. I feel like I don't want to be a shill for them, but you know.
You're the Drupal Association liaison to Drupal Easy Podcast.
I guess I am.
Well, Mike, this weekend when you showed up at Drupal Camp with a sandwich board with Drupal Association, you know, around you, I thought that was going a little far.
Did it? You know, I should have second guessed myself on that one, I guess. That took me all night, by the way, to paint.
Well, it was pretty.
Yeah. So anyway, so I wanted to just put this in the show notes and mention it quickly. It's been exactly 1 year since, well, not exactly, but it's been about 1 year since the association started hiring full-time staff. So I was surprised by that because it seemed to me like it was longer than a year, but Jacob Redding, the executive director of the association, posted a blog post kind of wrapping up what's been accomplished in the past year. And it's when I read this list, I think you're going to be surprised as to the fact that everything I say has only happened in the past year. They've gained 501c3 status, which this is something I thought they had all along, but apparently this is difficult to do for open source projects. So the association has gained that, and there's some information in this blog post. I'm not going to go too deeply into it. The Drupal.org redesign was actually completed in the past year. And again, I feel like I've been looking at it for more than a year, but, you know, that was obviously a huge effort that's, you know, was going on for more than just the past year, but it was actually completed in the past calendar year. Another huge thing is the migration to Git. For, you know, everything Drupal. And then they talk about there's been incremental infrastructure improvements with the Drupal.org servers that are housed at Oregon State University, their open source lab. And then, of course, the two Drupal cons in Chicago and London that took place, those are, you know, both kind of under the purview of the Drupal Association. As well as all of the kind of the new structural changes that are ongoing with the association, that kind of reflect the growing size of the Drupal project and the association. And then they have a list of some new programs, including, you know, as everybody knows, my favorite, the community cultivation grants.
So, Mike, can you just go ahead and say, I know the difference, but the difference between fiscal sponsorship of Drupal camps and the community cultivation grants, which I know some of those have gone to Drupal camps?
Yeah, so fiscal scholarship of Drupal camps, I was actually surprised to see in this list. And I have a feeling, I don't know if he meant to write Drupal cons, but it does say Drupal camps. Because there was a pilot program ongoing where Drupal camps could use the association as their fiscal agent. So that, you know, when they collected money for tickets, that money went to the Drupal Association. When they had to pay money for a venue, that money came from the Drupal Association. You know, the Drupal Association, in fact, would act as the bank for camps. And I don't believe that is ongoing. There's just a lot of overhead with that, and there weren't really processes in place. I don't think that's happening right now, but I could very well be wrong. So take everything, as usual, with everything I say, with a grain of salt. Where the community cultivation grants, this is strictly a grant program where organizations and even individuals can apply for money from the association for a project that they're involved with. And we've been trying to keep the criteria very loose as long as the project somehow grows the community, you know, it's eligible. Whether or not that the project is funded, you know, that kind of goes through our committee, and, you know, we only have so much money, and we're looking for projects that we think have the biggest bang for the buck. And by the way, we just decided on the Cycle 2 grant winners. And that blog post is probably going to be posted either today or tomorrow. So I can't say anything until that post is officially out there, but it will be out there soon, hopefully by the time you're listening to this. So anyway, there's some other new programs, the BizConnect stuff, additional membership benefits to association members. So again, it's a great overview of what the association has been doing and kind of has planned for the immediate future.
Excellent. Excellent. So it's always good to get an update on the Drupal Association, and obviously there's opportunities for people to become members, become sponsors, get involved with the different programs that are going on. Yeah. And I'm sure you guys will be announcing the next cohort of the sponsors or the scholarships.
Yeah,
what do you call it again?
the community
cultivation grants.
Yeah, and we are in the planning stages for new grant cycles moving forward. So those will be announced soon as well. And actually, I forgot to announce the association. Kind of the big news of the past 2 weeks is they're opening up a permanent office in Portland, Oregon as well. So, the Drupal Association will have an actual geographic home.
And also the home of the actual Drupal.org servers is very close by, right?
Exactly, yeah.
So it makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
Okay, and the final story of the day, Mike, your name is next to this one as well. It is cross-browser testing with a website called browserstack.com. How does this work?
Yeah, so I just want to bring this up to see if you guys have used it yet. I've only used it on a trial version. But what it is, you can sign up for free and get 60 minutes of free browser testing. And it actually opens up what appears to be a connection to a VM somewhere so that, you know, you can test your sites on any browser, a lot of browsers, a lot of operating systems, through a hosted VM that's hosted somewhere else. And it's really cool. I encourage you to check it out. And, you know, the performance it's not super fast, but if all you're doing is loading a page and looking at CSS, it's more than usable.
And then once you have gotten past your first hour, it looks like you can get unlimited one user, less than $20 a month.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. $19 a month for unlimited testing.
And then buy a block of hours so that you can use them whenever they expire after a year. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and they have all kinds of team plans and corporate plans. And actually, here, let me log in right now.
While you're logging in, it's a pretty cool service because you can do it straight through your browser. You don't have to install like VNC or something to hit their server.
Right.
It's very cool just to go and pop that open and take a look real quick.
Definitely. So yeah, I mean, I think at this point, the hump has been crossed with the whole IE6 business, but I'm sure there are still somewhere out there some client is asking for IE6 compatibility or even IE7, which is, you know, IE7 is starting to feel a little old at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're battling clients right now on that.
So the service, you know, once you're logged in, you can choose from any of five browsers: Firefox, IE, Chrome, Safari, and Opera, and a lot of versions for each browser. You know, Firefox is from version 3, IE from version 6, Chrome from version 12, Safari from 4, and Opera from 10. But then you can also choose a resolution.
Very nice.
Yeah. So, and it works. I mean, it's actually pretty darn cool. So if you don't want to mess around with virtual machines on your local host or having a second laptop or second machine on your desk, I mean, this looks to be a really cool way to do this because it's not emulating IE or anything else. It's actually a real version of IE just delivered to you, through your browser.
And did you guys see that there's... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, it's got a nice interface, too, the fact that it's got kind of like a little slide drawer that comes out if you're moving back and forth between, you know, various versions quite a lot. You can have the slide drawer open, or you can do full screen, which is kind of nice. So if you got a large layout.
And it's also got a tunneling feature. So if you're working on a local machine, you can actually have their browsers hit your machine. So it's a pretty cool thing if you want to test something that's not exactly public yet. I haven't tried the feature, but I'm going to today.
Check it out. Let us know. Report back.
Yep.
Very cool. So this is the time in the podcast where we like to take a moment to thank webenabled.com for providing Drupal Easy with free development environments for a bunch of our projects. And today we're going to just talk really quickly about, you know, how affordable, I guess, it is, you know, to get up and going with Webenabled. They do have a trial plan, but you're probably going to blow through that pretty quickly. Their developer plans start for as little as $9.95 a month, and that gives you 5 environments. So that's basically 5 applications from their library you can install, or they have a plan that's sort of like a shell application. You can install whatever it is that you want on top of it. It comes with Git and Subversion. It comes with, you know, you can integrate with other people. All they have to do is sign up for a web-enabled plan, and then you can, you know, by having their username, give them access to your repositories, and they can actually get access to your application dashboards. It lets you organize all your projects into folders. And probably the sweet feature really is when you want to create, you know, a new Drupal 7 site, you push a button, and within a few minutes, it's already set up. Database is there, file system is there, it's on hosting. And these people, they primarily work with Drupal, so it's optimized in such a way to have Drupal just work.
Yeah,
within a few minutes.
They know Drupal, that's for sure. And Drush is installed on all of their servers as well.
Yeah, and the cron tabs are usually, they've got a, like, I think every hour it's already got a cron tab set up, so yeah, you don't have to worry about setting up cron for your install. So
it's such an easy way to spin up a, you know, an install of Drupal to just prototype quickly for a client that you can, you know, you can spin it up and play with it and set something up and then just send your client the URL and you'd be done with it, the whole thing, in just, you know, a very short period of time.
And once you're through with the developer hosting and you want to, you know, upgrade to sort of real hosting, Web Enabled does that too, and they have plans again starting as low as $9.95 a month, and it depends a little bit on your usage and how much disk space you need, how much memory you need, and it looks like you know, definitely something that you may want to check out for just essentially effortless hosting plans, and you can do all of your development and your hosting with one company and point some domain names over at their servers, and you're ready to go.
So, Stephen, you said you use Web-Enabled for production hosting?
Yeah, we've got VPS with them. We also, you know, are on the development plan. The radio app where, you know, where the services are being served out of is on one of their VPSs. And like I said, so far it's great. I'm going to be consulting with them about, you know, future, you know, expandability, or, you know, making sure it's scalable. But I've always loved it. It's great. If I just need to test something out, I can, like, especially if, like, they've also got a clone feature. So like a lot of times in development, we want to test something out maybe two different ways, you know, develop a site, maybe two different branches, you know, like two different ways to develop a certain feature. We can just spin off a clone and check it out and see if there's, like, any unintended consequences, you know, without destroying the work that we've already done on, you know, the main branch. So
right. Well, check them out, webenabled.com.
Excellent. So this is my favorite part of the show. It's called Picks of the Week. It is generally a module that each of our hosts, and in this case our guest, will pick. But it could be a book. It could be a new album by your favorite band. We don't really put a lot of restrictions on it, but we try to keep it to something Drupal-related. So up first, we have Mike. Tell us about your pick this week.
I guess I'm kind of cheating again because I actually have two modules, but they're really, really related. And Andrew thought they were one module over the weekend, so it almost counts as one module. And I don't know if I snaked Andrew on this one as well, because we talked about it over the weekend, so I hope not. But
No, I wasn't going to use that one.
All right, very good. So it's the GeoField and GeoCoder modules for Drupal 7. You know, I stumbled upon these last week while we were working on a client site. And we needed an easy way to geocode an address and show it on a map in Drupal 7. You know, and there's the whole open layers route and gmap route, but I was just looking for something really fast, really easy. And I stumbled upon these modules, and they're both still in dev versions. I don't think there's any actual release versions out, but they do exactly what we needed. The geofield is just, it's a field type that stores latitude and longitude, interfaces with the address field module. So you can, well, actually the geocoder module actually interfaces with the address field module to automatically geocode data in the address field module and store it in the geofield field.
Wow.
So I don't know. I know. Let me summarize.
That was a summary.
You have an address in the address field. Mm-hmm. Geocoder module automatically will geocode that address and stuff the latitude and longitude field data into the geofield. And then geofield has a display formatter to display it as a map.
Excellent. So, Mike, does this handle like shapes and stuff, or is it just points?
I think I saw some
geofield wording can hold a lot of things in it.
Yeah, I saw some wording about definitely a track. I don't know if it handles shapes yet, but again, I only used it for points for now. So
if you've ever played with maps, you know exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah.
If not,
go play with
just
maps.
Just wait for a few minutes, and we'll be moving on soon.
So I know that's it. I'm done. I could talk more about it, but I think at this point, if I keep on saying geo this and geo that, I'll just confuse people. So I'm going to let it stand the way I said it in my summary.
Excellent.
Geo perfect.
Thank you.
So Andrew, this is a Drupal 6 module. What the hell, dude?
It's old. I know it's Drupal 6. Actually, the two people who are who created it are personal friends of mine. And
well, to them I say, what the hell?
Yeah. Well, they need to be updating it, and there's a backstory now, but. It's just a yet another breadcrumb module out there, but the difference is it's got like 8 different ways to attack a breadcrumb. You can do it based off of like node title, views, or menus. So it's kind of like the Swiss Army knife of breadcrumbs.
What the hell? There's no Drupal 7 version?
Wait, I think there's only one more person that needs to say it.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Definitely. Okay, there we go.
Well, that's actually how you invoke the Drupal 7 version. 3 people say that, boom, there's magically one.
Shall we mention their names and shame them more?
Oh, we can. It's Christopher Mitchell, also known as Mitches. If you meet him, definitely call him that. He loves it. Mitches. And Peter Mallet.
Awesome.
Very good. And they actually are here local, so we will berate
guys.
Them.
Yeah, we know
and
them.
And then
so
purchase them a beer. So. Yeah,
actually, do I know Christopher? I don't know if I know Mitch's.
You've met him before, but only in passing.
Was he? He wasn't at Drupal Camp South Florida, was he?
Not at South, but Central.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Pete. I saw down in Fort Lauderdale, but
yeah.
All right. Well, hopefully by this time next week they'll have a Drupal 7 version out. At this point, get them ready.
So my pick of the week actually was something I was in the middle of. My talk, and I said, yeah, and then this thing, someone asked me to do it. You could do it with code. Somebody in the room said, no, there's a module for that now. So I got schooled in my own session at Drupal Camp, so I felt a little sheepish, but then I went and looked up this project, and it turns out that it's really freaking cool. It's called the Entity Construction Kit, and if that sounds familiar, it really should. Basically, the function that we used to have from CCK where you could make any sort of a node type, you know, the original sort of like killer app for CCK where you could just make new node types from the UI. Now you can do that for entities. So, you know, different examples of entities in Drupal 7, you have nodes, obviously, users, taxonomy vocabularies, comments in the Drupal Commerce project. You have the products, media, organic groups can now be attached to any sort of an entity. The list goes on. And somebody said, how do I make my own entities? And I said, well, I think you can only do it with code. Turns out somebody has gone ahead and made a module. And then the question was, does it integrate with views? And because of the underlying entity API, which a lot of these entity-based modules now rely on, they do automatically integrate with views and search. So pretty much no reason not to use your own custom entities if you think you need them.
So does that let you... I'm a little bit confused. So once you create an entity, Can you still write code to add additional functionality to it, or is it?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It actually apparently there's some sort of hints and hooks in there to help you do it a little bit in a little bit more of an obvious way than just, you know, having to go and read all the documentation on api.drupal.org. I think the idea with this is to make it a little bit more straightforward about which things you should pay attention to when you're adding functionality to your entity and not. And then there are a couple of those common things that you kind of expect from nodes, you know, sort of like the, you know what, this was easier in Eaton's blog post to find what I was looking for. To let you to add some of those basic little things like adding uniquely identifiers, the created date and an updated date, and then whether or not it's published, those kinds of things. These are all just checkboxes. They're default functionality the module provides. You can add to your custom entities without having to write any code.
So it seems like that this is kind of like pulling back the curtain a little bit more, you know, on what entities are, as far as you've always been able to create a new entity in code, but this now exposes it via the UI, which, you know, is kind of a little bit daunting, I think.
The UI or the code part?
Well, the UI part, because, I mean, if you create an entity but you don't really understand what an entity does or is used for, that could, like Ryan says, that can open up a whole other can of worms.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to definitely say this is, you know, power users only. And I can say that, you know, 80 to 90% of most sites will not even need to come close to this. Everything that's off-the-shelf modules that make their own entities are going to be doing a great job.
Right.
So this is really, you know, there is a module that I used to use in Drupal 6 called Data. And it was very, very rarely where I needed to use it. But sometimes you just wanted to have like your own database table that did something. But this is sort of like that, you know, with a lot more power behind it, because it's got the whole support of the entity system now.
Right. No, that's cool. That looks good.
And last but not least, Steven, it looks like you have got a pick of the week.
Yeah, mine kind of dovetails into what you're talking about. Actually, I used this module not too long ago on a site, and without kind of like what we were just talking about before, is some people might use something without really truly understanding the underlying, you know, what's going on. I didn't really have a good feel for what a bundle was. I just knew that I wanted to just very quickly do a content copy, and then I was kind of stunned that, hey, that's not in Drupal 7 anymore. Despite the fact that, you know, all the CCK stuff has kind of moved into core, that particular function is not really available. So I read there's a number of things in where people are using features to transfer a node type over, but it seemed a little overkill for what I wanted to do. It's not yet available as a stable release. It's a dev version, but it does seem to work, at least from my experience in it. It's really, really sweet. So anyone who's, you know, is used to that export and import function for content types, it basically works exactly the same way.
Yeah, I've actually used that module.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. And it's by Swentel, the guy who does a Display Suite, and also, Sweaver. Some cool projects as well.
Yeah, it's always cool once you start getting a lot of experience in the Drupal community and you see new modules, but then you see that they're by people who have done like really incredible things before. Mm-hmm. Your comfort level with those new modules is like, it's like, well, yeah. I might as well be a, you know, a beta or a full release if this guy wrote it.
Yeah. Yeah. I picked up what bundles were during Ryan's talk on from CCK to entities at Drupal Camp South Florida. So
yay! Yeah.
So it's like it's after I'd already used it. It's like, oh, now I understand what this stuff is.
Well, this podcast is starting to eat its own dog food.
Yes. Yeah. Wow.
So one feature that we normally like to include in our podcasts, provided that we have someone submit them, and I did poke a few people at the Drupal camp this weekend, please send us suggestions for site of the week, because we really like doing them from the listeners instead of off of Dries's blog, although Dries's blog is excellent, and you should go read it.
I save.
We love you, Dries. So we had actually a suggestion again from our guest today, Stephen Barker, and it is called Ziva.
Yeah, Ziva. Actually, just Ziva.
yeah. So lots of extra vowels in there.
See, you should have had Andrew say it the first time.
Yeah.
It's another blown opportunity right there for podcast.
Actually, I would have got that one dead on. I would have been like, Ziva.
Oh, all right. It would have been easy for you.
Yeah. Yeah, Ziva.com. It's a Drupal 6 site. We're still easing into Drupal 7. It's kind of one of these things where we're still testing the waters on what we can do, what we can't do in Drupal 7 easily for our clients. So, but it's an Ubercart 2 site. It's I think it's just as far as like my own personal feelings on it, I think that it's just a really well laid out site. We use the MediaFront module to incorporate HTML5 video with the Flash fallback. We haven't expanded the social features on it a lot right now, but it's there are plans to kind of open it up to have it be more of a social community around this idea. It's a very cool product. It's basically... it reduces menstrual cramping, pains, and discomfort without any sort of medicine at all. And it's a very interesting idea.
So looking at the site, do you have I know that you have a team that works with you, but so the design of the site is really, really clean. You know, I love it. I mean, do you guys have someone in-house who does that, or do you have like kind of the same – I'm always interested to see how, you know, companies of a similar size handle theming. Mm-hmm. Do you have like one designer who does designing and then someone else who does the theming, or do you have like one uber person who does both? I mean,
well actually, yeah. We do have people who will do the design work, but in this case, it was actually a project where the client came to us already with the design in mind, or at least they were, you know, redeveloping their design.
Okay.
So we just implemented their design, and yeah, we do a lot of projects for this client. Their name is Robrady Design. A little shout out to them. They make some really cool stuff. It's like when you go to their office, yeah. It's like going to a grown-up's toy store. But they have some really talented graphic design artists, and this is their design, but we did work very intimately with them as far as implementing the design, making sure that it really rolled out the way they wanted it to, even across all the way through IE7. So,
all right,
cool. Very cool, very cool.
Yeah. We use the CSS3 Pi for a lot of that stuff. So,
how about a base theme?
Omega, but it's okay. D6, so it doesn't have a lot of the other stuff. We did on the view slideshow that's on the front page. We've got this is just the phase one of our modification to it, but you'll notice that it has like a dual layer slideshow. Each slide actually has two images with a transparent PNG, and there's a JavaScript that we kind of intercept the slide and have the second one fade in over top of the second one, or the second one fade in over top of the first one. The next phase, we're actually going to have the underlying slide image do a kind of Ken Burns effect using JavaScript as well. So that, yeah,
pretty.
Yeah, it'd be very sweet looking.
Yeah, I was wondering how you did the every slide is like two images, you know.
Yeah,
you get
exactly.
The picture, then you get some text on top of it, you know, a second or two later. So that's worth a blog post right there, dude.
That's true.
Get that on Drupal Planet.
At some point, I should actually start blogging.
You will not be. You will not be allowed back on this.
4.7 site updated, right?
Yeah, exactly. that is the plan, actually. Yeah, it's like as soon as we get this thing updated, maybe I'll want to actually send people there.
Well, how about this? How about we throw down the gauntlet and saying you will not be invited back on this podcast until you have a Drupal 7 site a blog post posted.
Pressure.
There you go.
The ultimatum. Drawn.
Line in the sand.
Over.
Well, you guys are harsh, but you know you gotta push. I guess so.
I take that all back.
I'm up with that.
Yeah. I'm gonna take it all back if you because we need your help with organizing Drupal Camp Central Florida. So
okay, there you go.
Okay, see, friendship restored.
My final question for you, Stephen, is: does it come in any other colors?
Oh, the belt.
Clearly, purple is just not my shade.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't get rid of headaches, though, man.
different kind of.
Yeah, you know, I didn't really notice that, but everything on the site is either white, gray, or purple.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Huh? Kind of unusual to see so much purple in a website too. Yeah, the belts do come in different colors, but the site itself doesn't. But that would be an interesting feature. Is like maybe have something where
choose your color.
Yeah.
Get on that blog post.
Right. Right after the site update.
Yeah, there you go.
So I want to thank you, everyone, for listening to the Drupal Easy podcast today. This has been a really good one, a little bit longer than our normal episodes, I think. But we had a lot to cover. There's a lot of stuff happened recently. And I want to let everyone know that they can find our podcast out there in the wide world at drupaleasy.com/podcast. You can also follow our links on Delicious to see what we may be talking about on the next episode. And we really appreciate you to follow us on Twitter at Drupal Easy or find us on Facebook, FriendFeed, various other places in the world. And please, if you find us someplace and you can, leave us a review. We really appreciate that. And I think all of us are on the Twitters and the Google Plus and wherever else you can find us out there in the world. So, Andrew, why don't you tell us where we can find you?
Oh, you can find me on Twitter at Andrew M. Riley or on Google Plus at some really long address.
look for the incredibly dashing, you know, programmer type. He's the only one, really.
Sort by attractiveness.
Yes, I wear a bomber jacket and have a blowing silk scarf.
Wow.
I'm sensing like a new photo shoot for the podcast cover art.
Get that one going for sure.
And Mr. Mike Anello, where can we find all about you and your NASA engineer mini mics?
You can follow me at Ultimike pretty much anywhere. So Ultimike on Twitter. Drupal.org, Google Plus. That's where I am.
Awesome. And our guest Stephen, where are you?
I'm on at Digital Frontier on Twitter, and you can see my my old 4.7 site for a little bit longer. digitalfrontiersmedia.com.
So your URL is plural, but your Twitter handle is singular.
Yeah, I can't remember how that came about. I think.
Probably a late night.
Yeah, probably. I think actually there was something like Twitter has some has some issues with the length of a name, and Digital Frontiers Media is pretty long. So yeah.
Hey, before we wrap up, I do, you know, this is one of the few times where we're going to tease an upcoming podcast. But 2 weeks from today, we have Emma Jane Hogben scheduled to come on and talk about her new book. If you recall, she was the one who wrote the I just lost the title of
Front End Drupal.
Thank you, Front End Drupal. That's probably the best theming book out there for Drupal. She is about to release. I don't actually know if it's out yet. I have a review copy which I've been going over, but it's called Drupal: A User's Guide, and it kind of feels like the prequel to Front End Drupal. It's outstanding. I'm through about a third of it. But she'll be on to talk about it, and we always have she's a great guest and great to talk to and so knowledgeable about everything Drupal that, you know, really looking forward to that.
Awesome. I'll be listening in.
That was one of my favorite interviews to do out of the last several years, so I'm looking forward to it myself. And finally, I would be slightly remiss if I did not mention our sponsor, WebEnabled. Please go check them out. And finally, you can find me as Liberator with the Web 2.0 spelling. And for Drupal Easy Podcast 66, we are signing off.
See ya!